Thank you, Ron, for reading our gospel lesson today. Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What seems like bad manners or cynicism is always a sign of things no eyes have seen or ears have heard. We don't know what wars are going on down where the spirit meets the bone. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. It is finally back. Woo! We can feel it in the air. And I'm not talking about pumpkin spice lattes or pastries, but I'm talking about college football. And while I respect the Bobcats, and I'm so glad we have it up here, I have to say, O-H-I-O. We love the hype. We do. And they're beautiful socks, thank you. This past week, on Thursday night, the Buckeyes took on the Golden Gophers. Fans were rowing the boats as people wondered if this new quarterback, still just 19 years old, could handle the spotlight. While it was far from a perfect game, C.J. Stroud did not disappoint, throwing for 294 yards and 4 touchdown passes. It was a great beginning to hopefully a successful college football career. Now, around Central Ohio, we love our sports. Cars decked out with decals and pennants, people wearing jerseys and necklaces. I even saw a man this week wearing face paint into a store, and the game was in Minnesota. I too love sports, and I must admit that this past week I could not resist the 18-month onesie that said the Buckeyes logo and just underneath said Game Day. Because it's fun to be a part of something. Some of us live for Saturday, for the excitement of kickoff or whatever sport, first pitch, puck drop, tip-off. It helps us live in the moment and enjoy the fact that anything can happen. I have found that watching a game can be therapeutic and centering after a long week. It can also be a point of connection and community with complete strangers. However, pride in one's team can also divide people. While I love team rivalries and playfully teasing fans of another team, I have also witnessed and been on the receiving end of personal and nasty attacks based on the team logo I wore. Now don't get me wrong, the last clergy member I worked with was a fan of that team up north, and if you don't think that when that game came along, I did not rouse him a bit, I absolutely did. But at the end of the day, we both really did care about each other. Some people take it a little too far. It is that side of sports and really the manifestation of our culture that is so often quick to create enemies and walls. And we do this all the time in the various groups that we are a part of. Some of us were taught to stay away from specific families. Don't play, don't make friends with anyone from that family. At work, there may be a department or a group of people that you were taught always gets it wrong. You can never trust them. Those groups often demand us to create walls, boundaries of who is in and who is out. And we can see that in our politics today, where many perceive weakness if one of another party influences you. We see that in the rise of American exceptionalism. We deserve doses of vaccines, and the world can just wait. Yes, our groups dictate our boundaries. Those in our tribe are welcome. They are family. They are accepted as they are, and they are worthy of receiving whatever they need. But those outside the group are not families. They are rivals or enemies, and they are not deserving of what they have. And there was this human-made wall or boundary put up, and we're taught not to cross it. Last Sunday, we examined the text where Jesus was confronted by Pharisees and scribes who claimed that Jesus broke a boundary by not washing his hands before he ate. His disobedience to the law was enough for Jewish leaders to test his authority to see if the crowd would kick him out of the tribe. Jesus challenged the law, the tradition, that was being used to exclude Gentiles from equal treatment at table fellowship. Jesus was wearing the wrong jersey, was rooting for the wrong players. Yet after their dialogue, the people continued to follow Jesus, thus validating his innovation to the faith as God-inspired. For all were welcome to the table, even Gentiles. Today's text immediately follows last week's in chapter 7 of Mark. And what I love about Mark is that Jesus is 100% human. We like to say that Jesus was fully human and fully divine. But let's face it, we don't want to follow someone who is making mistakes. We don't want to follow someone that is tired. Yet in this text, Jesus is in serious need of a vacation. And some of us might feel that today. He needs to get away from pushing crowds and public debates. And so he travels to the region of Tyre. Now, I believe through Jesus, God shows us how to be human. And last time I checked, being human means good days and bad days. Being human is holding both joy and grief in the same moment. Being human is getting it right one second, and then the very next, getting it completely wrong. The story of the Syrophoenician woman is about moving beyond boundaries and whether Jesus will practice what he preached. So I want to offer two interpretations of this well-known story this morning. One traditional and one you may not have thought about before. Yet both reveal the humanness, which is to say the relatability of Jesus, but more importantly, the purpose of God in a world divided. The common interpretation is this, that Jesus travels into Gentile territory and he wants to be unnoticed. When a woman discreetly follows him into a house, believing that her daughter, a Gentile, is worthy of God's grace. This makes sense since Jesus has been publicly teaching this, but given the time period and societal norms, power and authority would have resided with Jesus, a man. In fact, those listening to Mark's rendition of events would have been taken back to hear that the two even occupied the same space together. Women were not on equal ground as men. Yet they were together, and Jesus engages her. Equally as shocking was that this Gentile believed she was equal to the healing and grace of God, which up to this point in Mark, Jesus has only been serving Jewish communities. Another layer is if this woman were single at this time period, the probability of her being impoverished was very high, and perhaps she didn't have the resources to give her child the care that she needed. Religion, gender, nationality, socioeconomic walls are all there in the story. Yet they were together. The woman is desperate, begging Jesus to heal her daughter, and if we are hoping he continues to meet with her with the grace and compassion of God, we are disappointed. Jesus responds, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." I once heard a preacher call this Jerk Jesus. And she was absolutely right. We don't expect it, but this is a nasty and personal attack. Because you see, dogs at this time were scavengers, not pampered pets that were part of our family. Jesus refers to her daughter as subhuman, as an animal, while Jewish children, those from his circle, his tribe, have access to the table and the food that is on it. The Syrophoenician woman, desperate for her daughter's healing to be restored, responds, "Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Even her daughter, whom Jesus does not consider a child, is worthy of God's grace. It appears that Jesus has abandoned his own teaching, his own sermons, and we can relate to his human shortcomings, which has sought to protect those within his own community rather than the well-being of others. I now invite you to listen to another interpretation, because let's be honest, this does not make Jesus look too good. So let's see if we can rectify his reputation. We begin with a deeper understanding of the region Jesus has traveled to. It is next to the Mediterranean Sea in the land of Tyre, where commerce and shipping created these business elites. And it was well known that under Roman occupation, Tyre's leaders acted as political pawns to extract goods and services from regions south, which were the regions that Jesus tended to. Biblical scholar Leanne Van Dyke suggests that the Syrophoenician woman did not so much discreetly enter the home where Jesus was staying, but instead she may have entered boldly, accustomed to her place of privilege and power. She may have assumed authority over Jesus. So when Jesus confronts her with sharp words, he is actually confronting the violent and oppressive economic advantages the elites have reaped from his people. Jesus can picture the faces of those barely surviving because of business practices of people like her. This Jesus is concerned with justice, focused on the needs of his people back home, willing to call out systems that are unjust. And we too may be thinking, right on, Jesus, stick it to the system. Way to confront the powers that be. And if we think that this rectifies Jesus' reputation, if we think this redeems his full divinity, what about the mother's daughter? What about her? It is not fair to take the Jewish children's food and throw it to the Syrophoenician dogs. When our team, our tribe, our group, and those within are the only people of any worth, we fail, like Jesus, to see the hurting and suffering God has called us to tend to. When we prioritize only serving Christians, or only Americans, or only those on this side of town, or those who have citizen status, we have failed, like Jesus, to really understand God's boundless grace and the gospel message. But I believe Jesus teaches us something important here. It is easy to let our guard down, especially when we are tired and we are exhausted by the world and our busy lives. And we may even believe the lie that our group is superior or more deserving. Jesus just successfully debated that with the scribes and Pharisees, but as soon as he goes to live it, he grows weary and he falls short of his own conviction. I believe Jesus gives us permission to get it wrong. We can relate to his humanness and believe his lesson is one every parent wants their child to learn. And that is not how to win or to be the best, but it's how to lose, how to be wrong, and get better. It was an encounter of the other, a poor, impoverished Gentile woman, or corporate elite Gentile woman, who corrects Jesus saying, "I believe all belong in God's family, that they are all on God's team, which includes my daughter." She does not back down. She stands firm in her belief that God does not care about those boundaries. That God does not abide by our petty walls. No matter her nationality, or gender, or religion, or location, whatever it is, does not keep her from genuine community. God cares about one thing. That is the health of God's child. Her daughter. That's it. It is about the health and wholeness of the human family. Jesus doesn't double down and go on the news, blindly fighting for his group. He doesn't say, yeah, I got it, let's just move on. But he becomes an agent of healing and change. Because before he has encountered the Syrophoenician woman, he has only been serving Jewish communities, his own group, including the feeding of the 5,000. But after this story in Mark, Jesus begins going into Gentile communities more frequently. He will even feed 4,000 in a Gentile neighborhood. And while traditionally we believe the story is Jesus healing the daughter, it appears the Syrophoenician woman also heals Jesus from the dangerously human ways of seeing the world with division, to seeing it as God sees it, as one community worthy of love. So as you go into your week, I invite you to think about the various groups that you are a part of. Who are the ones that you are taught are to be left out, or other, or they're less than? How have you fallen short of that lie that your group is more deserving of the benefits? How is God using those left out in the margins to teach you about what matters to God? There is one ritual in college football that gets it right. And I'm proud to say it also comes from a Big Ten team, which is one of my groups. It is called the Iowa Wave. You see it every home game following the third quarter and just before the fourth quarter, where both teams, the Hawkeyes and whoever they're playing that day, pause their competition, their drive to win. They put down their play charts. Some even take off their helmets. The fans stop their cheering, and everyone in the stadium turns to face the Stead Family Children's Hospital, which towers over the stadium. And in the windows are the faces of children who can watch the game, enjoy community, and forget about their many treatments. But in that moment, between the third and fourth quarter, where sometimes the most intense football is being played, everyone pauses and waves at the children as if to say, this is only a sport. And we see you and your struggle. And we are with you. Soon we will once again come to the table. We will relearn that this table is not ours. But it is God's table who has welcomed and invites everyone to participate who needs a meal. In our eating and drinking, may our eyes be opened, that we might recognize the risen Christ in our midst, indeed in each person we meet. Amen.